This podcast was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 42. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Joining us today is Kyle Harris from San Diego, California. Kyle is a junior at the University of California in San Diego, studying cognitive science, recently transferred there. And like many of the people I've had on the show, Kyle and I met at the Cure SMA conference this year, and we're happy to have him here. So, Kyle, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Definitely. And I forgot to mention, he has SMA type 3, so cool. Well, we will get started in just a moment. Before we start talking, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsors.
Are you interested in learning more about the latest treatment for spinal muscular atrophy? Visit treatsma.com to see how this treatment works, hear about family stories, and learn about the steps to starting treatment. Visit treatsma.com.
All right. Well, Kyle, to start off, you know, I leave this part to kind of let guests kind of tell their story. And so back when talking about you growing up and growing up with SMA, can you just give listeners a little bit of info about your diagnosis story and what it was like for you growing up with SMA?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I'll start from the beginning. I want to say, well, really, to my brother, it's not just me. I have SMA. My brother, the one who's next in age to me, my older brother, he has SMA as well. And so I guess my parents started noticing it in him first. Just him, like, falling and stuff like that on the playground, that sort of thing. And basically, they started, you know, poking around, figuring out, you know, like, what's going on? This isn't right, you know, something, my kid keeps falling and all that. And so they started, you know, running tests on him. And so we make the joke he's kind of the guinea pig.
Right.
So they kind of did tests and stuff. And the doctors said, you know, It couldn't be SMA because, you know, we both had reflexes, you know, because they were getting me tested too by that point, since I started showing symptoms too. You know, this was like early childhood. Like, I was probably like 4 or 5, and my brother's probably like 8, 9, you know, probably almost over 10 years old by this point. And so basically the doctor said, well, they can't have SMA because they have reflexes, you know. Because they would hit, you know, hit the hammer on the knee or whatever, boom, reflex, you know. If you have SMA, you're supposedly not supposed to have reflexes. But, you know, so my parents pushed them to do a DNA test, and sure enough, we had SMA, you know.
Right, right. And is your brother your only sibling?
No, I actually have 3 older brothers.
Okay, gotcha. And the other ones are able-bodied?
Yeah, so my 2 oldest brothers, they're able-bodied, not affected by SMA, and then my brother, who's next in age to me, he has SMA type 3 as well.
Gotcha. Well, that brings up a good point, because I'm always interested in talking with other people with SMA who have had a sibling with SMA, you know, because, you know, in my family, I'm the only one with it. Both my siblings are able-bodied. So I'm really curious, you know, you talked about, you mentioned that your brother was sort of the guinea pig. But can you talk a little bit more about kind of that dynamic growing up? You know, like, was there, did it help to have the fact that he was older and you could kind of learn from him and some of the things he went through?
You know, I don't know if when I was, since I was so young by that point, I don't know if I really learned from him in terms of like my SMA. I feel like we just kind of dealt with it in our own ways because it affected us in different ways. You know, I think he was weaker in different ways, and I was weaker in different ways, you know, so, like,
right.
Like, I was in a wheelchair before him, but I'm not sure, I can't say for sure if that was just, like, by pure willpower on his part, or just my legs were out quicker, or what, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, I mean, I think as a family, we are always kind of in it together, you know, and figuring out how to deal with it, you know, and, you know, my parents, my brothers, you know. I look out to my brother, no doubt, you know. I just never really thought about I guess I never really reflected his experience with SMA with mine. We kind of did our own thing with how we coped with it, I guess, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And, well, you mentioned some of kind of the different levels of abilities there. Do you mind talking about some of those? I know you said you started using a chair earlier, but that's another thing that's always interesting because SMA is, it affects people so differently, you know?
Yeah, so basically, like, I started using a wheelchair probably, like, around, I want to say, 5th, 6th grade. I was, well, basically, I guess I'll go back a little, 07 when I was 9 years old. Guess you know how old I am now, whoops. anyway, so basically, back in 07 when I was 9 years old, I had a tendon transfer because my tendon was, like, out of place. And after that, I was pretty much on crutches for the whole time, and I did that for, like, 2 years. And I kind of more or less just like, I'm tired of crutching. I just want a power chair, you know, which I think was probably kind of a mistake. I feel like I could have held out a little longer. So, I mean, I was using a wheelchair by the time I was 12, you know, 11, 12, and pretty much by 12 or 13, like, you know, I couldn't even really crutch that much. It was pretty much, you know, wheelchair from there. My older brother, on the other hand, he walked, you know, he eventually got to the point where he couldn't walk very far, and by the time he was 8, it took him to like almost 18, I think, before he started using the wheelchair, that sort of thing. So I mean, I think I always had better upper body strength. I think I was always stronger in that regard, but he did walk longer than I did.
Right. And you mentioned an attendant, because this is another thing I'm curious about, because like you and I are around the same age, but you know, as a type 2, I always had to have an aide with me in school. Did you have that? Because, you know, if you didn't start using a chair till later, I wasn't sure what kind of assistance you needed, like, in school and that kind of thing.
No, I did not. I did not have really any assistance at all during school. And to be quite honest, like, even now in college, like, I'm 21 now, and, like, I'm just now figuring out hiring the caregiver thing.
Right. So,
like, and even when I had my parents, like, they'd make me food and stuff like that, but, like, I've always done a lot of the stuff on my own, and, yeah.
No, that's a great point, and that's definitely something we'll talk about more. But before we get into college, too, you know, I'm curious, what were some of, you know, your interests growing up? You know, I know you study cognitive science now. Was science a big interest for you? Well, like, I'm curious what your passions and hobbies were.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a town of engineers, basically, more or less, because my dad worked for the Navy as a civilian at China Lake Naval Air Weapons Station. That's up in Ridgecrest. And whole town of engineers, you know, everyone was, you know, talking about engineering. Everyone's kids goes to school to be a civil engineer, mechanical engineer, computer engineer, whatever, computer scientist. So I think that I was always around that culture. And there was also the part of, it was a military town, you know, a naval air station, so every day I could just wake up and hear, you know, F-18s, you know, flying over my house. You know,
so right.
It was a combination of, like, engineering and military I grew up around. And so, initially, you know, would it not have been for SMA, I probably would have joined the Marines after college to become a fighter pilot, because that's what I really would have loved to do. I think that'd be really awesome. Obviously, that's not going to work out. But, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, yeah, I didn't say.
Okay. So that's probably not going to work out, given even if there was a cure for SMA in the next 10 years, say, you know, and fully recovered all that, you know, I'd be too old, all that, I'd be in a different career. So I think I pretty much accepted that I probably won't be in the military, but, you know, growing up in an engineering town, I knew I wanted to do, you know, science. I want to do something with science or something with tech, really. And so I think I've always been a person who had an affinity for design, but also had loved to do that, apply that to technology. So I think really cognitive science kind of met that gap for me of combining a good design with good, I guess, computer programming, if you will.
Sure. And well, that's great, I guess, and I think that feeds nicely into talking about college. And so you know, you're recently transferring to you said you got UC UCSD, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Got it, okay. So you transferred there and you were at community college prior to that. So can you talk a little bit about that? First off, if you want to talk about community college, like what that transition was like from high school to there, and you know, did you, and I know you said you only recently started hiring caregivers, but did you consider it early, or what has that process been like?
Yeah, so basically, so I guess, I mean, I started college when I was 16 because I graduated 2 years early. We have a proficiency exam you can take here, and I just wanted to go straight to community college. My brother, who has SMA, did the same thing, so I just kind of followed along in that. And by the way, amazing decision I made. I don't regret that at all. Like, I'm glad I got a jump start on college. You know, my last 2 years of high school were basically my first 2 years of college. And yeah, so I mean, the transition, it was actually a pretty good transition. You know, I was living with my parents. You know, I lived with my parents, you know, pretty much most of community college up until the end of 2018 when they moved to out of state to Utah. Yeah, I mean, so, but in terms of, like, I guess caregivers, you know, I wasn't really sure. I mean, again, I moved out back in, you know, December, January, and to stay here in San Diego County so I can finish up community college while my parents moved to Utah. But basically, you know, I rented a room from a lady up in a town called Fallbrook, and, you know, she was, she had an empty room. It was cheap, so I took it. You know, I said, don't worry about, you know, I'll make sure I hire a caregiver so you don't have to help me out, all that. And, but turns out she was actually willing to take my in-home support services hours, and it actually worked out really well, you know. So I think, you know, that part of this last season of life, really, I was really lucky to get so lucky with caregiving hours. And yeah, and now I'm down here. I'm still trying to figure out the caregiving situation. I don't even have anybody hired yet, to be quite honest. I still have some calls to make. But yeah, I guess that kind of goes back to doing stuff on my own a lot. And, you know, it's tough to do, but I can do it for a time if I need to.
Sure, sure. Well, and when you did make that transition to when your parents moved away and you were getting, was that was your first experience with caregivers outside of your family?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I would say it was. And it was definitely a process. You know, I didn't really ask her for much. To be honest, like, my first month I was there, like, I was making all my own food, I was doing all my own laundry, like, I was like, I gotta do this myself, I can't be a bother, that sort of thing, you know, because, what, you know, all that. And, well, she wasn't getting hours at the time, I guess, so I guess that was part of it, you know?
Sure. But
we kind of, as time went on, you know, she was like, hey, I'm willing to pick up your hours, you know, all that sort of thing, and it just kind of worked out over time, and I got... Time went on, I got more comfortable with her helping me make food, do laundry, whatever, you know, that sort of thing.
Sure, sure. And I know, you know, I mean, you're type 3, like, what kind of assistance do you, if you don't mind me asking, like, do you need with transferring and that kind of thing? Like, the more...
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I usually, like, in terms of, like, transferring, I can pretty much transfer myself to anything.
Okay.
Like I said, making food, doing laundry... just getting something heavy off the shelf or picking up something heavy. Sometimes I might need help, like, getting some, like, tight pants on or something like that, or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. But I never really needed help with anything beyond those tasks, I guess, you know?
Gotcha, yeah. No, it's always interesting, and I know that, too, comes into play when you are starting that process of trying to hire more caregivers. It's like, okay, what hours do I really need, and you know, is it worth the struggle and all of that? So so I guess, yeah, that brings me to, now that you're at a new school and you're trying to figure all that out, what's the process been like so far, you know, in terms of searching and figuring out what you can and can't get?
Yeah, so basically I started with somebody on the Living with MD Facebook group, actually. Setting me in San Diego looking for a caregiver a few months back, and so I called a guy up, but I don't know if he's going to work out because, you know, he wants more money than what they offer, so that's whatever.
Sure.
But I did get a registry. The county provides, San Diego provides me a registry, and I have like 10 names right now with phone numbers. And basically, I'm going to call all those people first. That's what I'm going to start with and see what we get out of those, because they're on a registry, so they have references, all that. You know, they're registered with IHSS, fingerprinted, background check, all that, you know? So, yeah, I mean, that's just what I'm working with. I'm also being told by friends and mentors of mine to look around on campus, especially because there's going to be, you know, students that live nearby that want, you know, close by work. That's makes a decent, I guess, if almost minimum wage.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's always tricky finding the right service and that, or if you're going to pay out of pocket and all those things. So it's definitely a learning process, but yeah, I wish you the best there. So that's
yeah,
cool.
Thanks. Yeah, and like, and also, and I think I even posed that. I asked, like, how do you get somebody to show up at 6 a.m.? Like, I have an 8 a.m. lecture Tuesdays and Thursdays. That's when my day starts, you know, so I have to be up by, like, 6, 6.30, so I might have to, that might be a part I have to handle on my own, or just get stuff ready the night before, but, yeah.
Right, right, that's tough.
I don't have the hours to keep somebody overnight, no way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and, too, on the subject of college, you know, right before we started the phone call, we were talking a little bit about accessibility issues and that kind of thing. So, can you talk a little bit about that in terms of, you know, accessibility issues you've dealt with your whole life, and also, was that a factor in determining what university you wanted to go to?
Yeah, so, I think... Yeah, I feel like accessibility is actually, believe it or not, it's actually hasn't been really on my radar really until probably like the past 5 years, I want to say. And part of that is, one, I think, I don't know, I was a kid, I probably just didn't pay attention as much. And two, also, you know, I really learned about disability rights and accessibility. I didn't really even think about it until I attended a friend and mentor of mine's retreat, a life-enhancing retreat. His name's John Kerr. And basically, he runs a retreat up in Northern California every year. And so I went to the first one, and basically, you know, it really changed the way how I viewed disabilities and how to view it through the social model. And that really just kind of opened my eyes to, like, accessibility and really made me conscious of that. So, I think from that experience, I really started paying attention to accessibility. Like, oh wow, that there's no curb cuts at this crosswalk, or oh wow, you know that's not right, or oh wow, this disabled spot doesn't have any accessible aisle next to it. It's just a spot, regular spot with a disabled logo on it. Like, that's not right.
Right.
You know, it's like that's not a disabled spot. That's a fake disabled spot. You know. So yeah, I mean. Do you want me to talk about, like, accessibility here on campus in particular, I guess? Or?
Campus and also, like, social events and stuff. Like, I think about, you know, when I went over to, you know, friends' houses in college, it was always fortunate if they were, you know, their house or apartment was first floor and easy to get into. But it was always frustrating if, like, you know, apartment complex that had, you know, they were on the top floor and there was no elevator or anything. Have you run into anything like that?
Yeah, so, actually, yeah, it's funny. Yeah, and especially, it's that way, especially when you go to a lot of houses, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, especially, I don't know what it is about San Diego County, or just in Southern California in general. Maybe it's not just us, but it seems like every single house has, like, at least two big giant steps to get up to the, like, in through the front door. And, like, I don't know if it's just, like, an architecture thing or what, so it's... Like, I went to a birthday party this last weekend, and, like, we had to, like, I had to, like, straddle, like, two boards on my chair, not hope I don't, like, drive off of it.
Yeah.
Like, steps.
Right.
You know? Because it's compact, fits in the back of my van, so I'm just, like, two boards, and, you know, just hope for the best, you know? So, but even here at school, you know, there's some accessibility stuff. Not trying to bash on my school.
Oh no, it's and this is I ask this to every guest, and it's not, I mean, like, I it's something I think that you know, you can love your school, you can love your state, but I think this provides an opportunity to provide, you know, constructive criticism, so
of course. But I mean, like, even here where I live right now, like, there's, well, one, there's just not enough crosswalks, period. but the crosswalk, there's like a crosswalk at each end of the street in the in our like kind of housing area. It's a bit, it's a big complex, multiple buildings, all that. And the middle crosswalk is has no curb cuts, which I've seen that before, but you know, I'm just like, this thing was built in 2011. Like,
right.
Handled that. Like, it's not, it's 8 years old. This isn't like from 40 years ago. This is a relatively new complex. So that one kind of blew me away. And also, like, I know some of the buildings on the other side, they have these weird layouts. Like, the first floor is accessible, but then, like, they don't have any elevators to get to the higher floors. So, like, if anybody has like, a kickback or something like that, you know, I'm going to be like, I can't get up there, you know?
Right, right.
You know, and so luckily, my side, I guess I have to describe the layout. There's a bunch of, you know, 4 or 5 story buildings, and then there's 2 15-story towers. Now, the towers have elevators, and everything on my side of the street has elevators. It's just on the back side of the other side of the street, there's a bunch that don't have elevators. And so I think it's just like, just designing things to be accessible from the get-go. I think that's huge, especially in this day and age. I just don't think there's any excuse for having things not being like almost 100% accessible.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, yeah, I've definitely been in situations like that. And it's funny you mentioned the thing about the boards and all that, because I've also done things like that where you try to put 2 ramps together to get over some steps and stuff. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, and that's a great point, too, about how, you know, modern buildings still face these issues. And even though they should be ADA compliable, a lot of times they're not, you know? So it's
yeah. Yeah, I mean, in general, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, where I live, it's generally ADA compliant. It's really the crosswalk's the only thing I can think of. Like, those housing units, they don't technically have to be accessible by law, I guess, because they have plenty of other ADA accessible rooms to live in. It's just kind of like, it's like, you should make it accessible, though, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, you know? And not only that, like, my brother made a good point to me one time. Is like, just make everything accessible. Like, it's just nicer. Like, nobody wants to walk through a narrow hallway or go up a bunch of steps or anything like that. Like, I just want to hop in the elevator or go over a smooth threshold, you know?
Right. It's as simple as that.
It's just good design in general. And as somebody who's focusing on design, it's more like, yeah, you have a point. You know, it's just, accessibility is just nicer for everybody.
Definitely. Well, and on that note of, you know, you're focusing on design, and can you talk a little bit about your major now and kind of, you know, I know you talked about your background in, you know, science and growing up in an engineering family, but yeah, if you can just talk about how you landed on this major and maybe what you plan to do with it.
Yeah, so, I initially started with computer science. That's actually what my associate's is in for MiraCosta College. But basically, I was doing computer science and it was tough. You know, I'm not going to lie. The early programming classes, they were pretty tough. I had to retake a few of them. I retook Calculus 1 and 2 at least one. Yeah, I retook Calculus 1 and 2, so those took 2 tries to get those done. And I dropped out of Calculus 3, didn't even finish that, which I don't really need it, but it was for a prerequisite at the time. So, I mean, I think it's like the really hard sciences, like the math and all that, and the really difficult logic. I think I wasn't a huge fan of that. And so when I kind of started looking around, like at different UCs, you know, University of California's, I was kind of run across a degree called informatics at UC Irvine. And they have a specialization in that called human-computer interaction. I'm like, what's this? One of my professors specialized in that. So I kind of looked into it, and I'm like, oh, wow, that's like really awesome. It's like kind of incorporating design and like, you know, designing, I guess, not only graphics, but also how it works and making something user-friendly with kind of computer science. And I'm like, that's pretty awesome. So, you know, I really went hard for UC Irvine for their informatics degree back in 2018. And I was on a program, what's called Transfer Admission Guarantee. Apparently it's not actually guaranteed though, because they rejected me off of a technicality. So that sucked, because I thought I was going to get in. So I waited a whole nother year, but I discovered UCSD's cognitive science major, and found out they had a specialization just like that, I'm like, I want to go to UCSD. Like, I kind of, it's closer to home, you know, and it's a little, what's more prestigious, whatever. So, you know, then like UC Irvine, it costs the same. So I ultimately, you know, decided on UCSD. I got into pretty much almost every single school I applied to, except for a few. And really, I mean, that's just kind of how I landed here, you know.
That's really cool. And, you know, do you have any kind of specific ideas for what you want to do with that? I know you're just starting out in the program, but, you know, talking about, like, could you in any way maybe tie it to accessibility, or is that something you're thinking about?
Yeah, so basically, yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, in cognitive science, the specialization is called design interaction. It's just like, it used to be called human-computer interaction, but they changed it for whatever reason. But basically, it focuses a lot on, since cognitive science, it focuses a lot on how people react and how people interact with technology. So this is going down to really, basically, like how the brain fires off, and really, really just a very, I guess, neuroscience level of things. And basically, so with that in mind, I guess, you know, with that comes, I guess, user experience. And to make, if you have that underlying knowledge of how humans interact with technology, and also with my experience with disability, how people with disabilities interact with technology, I think I can kind of merge that to learn how to design software and apps and or anything like that, so that way they're accessible, they're easy to use, and they make sense, you know. That's really the UX side of things, and that's really what I want to focus on.
That's great. No, that's a really unique program, and I think it's cool that, like, you kind of initially thought of the more, you know, broad spectrum of computer science and all that, and then found a way to do something that will really tie into, you know, passion for improving accessibility and all that. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Definitely. Cool. Well, you know, I did want to, shifting gears a little, we talked a little bit about this before the call, but, so I know you are on Spinraza, and I always invite my listeners to, and my guests, sorry, to, talk about their experience with the treatment. So, if you want to, could you talk a little bit about that and, how long you've been on it, and, you know, either what progress you may have seen or, what the whole experience has been like?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting journey, I will say. You know, I started it back in August 2017, so probably, you know, not long after they approved it, you know, several months. And sorry, I'm trying to find a quiet spot. But...
Oh, no worries. It's all good, man.
Okay. Yeah, so Spinraza. Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. You know, August 2017, got my first one, did all my loading doses. Yeah, I mean, getting the injection itself, you know, it's always a little painful, I'd say. Sometimes it's severely painful, unfortunately. You know, whether the doctor misses and hits the bone or something like that, you know, accidents happen, you know. And especially on me, you know, it's not even so much just accidents, I guess. I won't say that. It's not... It's really just that for some reason they've always had difficulty getting the needle in my spine, but like, I don't know why, like, whereas like all the other patients they tell me about say they don't have the same problems. So I'm not sure like what it could be. I mean, I'm a 6'2" human being, so I suppose maybe I can't bend my spine as well or something. I don't know. So I mean, yeah, I mean the injections themselves, I'm willing to put up with it every 16 weeks or whatever. In terms of improvements, though, I'd say, like, it was really, like, early on, I was doing really good, and, I don't know, and then, like, the past, like, year or so, I would say, I've just been kind of, like, falling off and getting actually weaker, you know, so I'm not sure really what happened, and then, like, I got really weak, like, by, like, I think July, August this year, I was just like, man, this is crazy, like, what's going on? And now I feel like I'm on an upswing a little bit again, but it's really just a roller coaster. I know people have described that, but it's really just kind of freaked me out how much strength I've lost, you know, since then.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, the way SMA works and the, it, even with the treatment, it's still, the progression is still, very possible, you know? So, it, and,
yeah.
And I'm curious too, like, I know you're, again, you're type 3, but did you ever have spinal fusion surgery?
No, I didn't. I don't have.
Okay.
Spinal fusion's for scoliosis, right?
Yeah, yeah. It used to be, I think now they've kind of, there's a new operation, or newer, that more kids today are getting in place of the spinal fusion, but, yeah, like, when I was growing up, it was pretty standard for anyone, but I wasn't sure as much about, I still know type 3s who have had it, but I wasn't sure how common it was there, but yeah, it's for straightening out the spine a little more, and that's why a lot of us can't do the standard spinal tap injection method for Spinraza, so I was just curious about that.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I didn't get the spinal fusion, because I actually don't have, any scoliosis.
Gotcha.
You know, it's actually pretty cool. Like, I think, in fact, when I was younger, I had you have slight scoliosis, but today, like, past couple of years, they were, like, no detectable scoliosis, so I grew out of it in a way.
Kind of right, weird,
but like, I'm actually really happy about that, because I was like, oh man, I hope it doesn't get worse. You know, I really don't want to get spinal fusion, because I know that's going to be, you know, I'm guessing it's more painful.
Yeah, it's tough, but
I mean, I'm not saying you can't live with it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, like, I'd prefer not. You know,
right? And I mean, especially as older, like, it can really disrupt your life. You know, so yeah.
Yeah. So I've been really, I guess, lucky in that regard. You know, been able to. You know, keep my spine pretty straight, and I do have pretty bad lordosis, though. I guess it's not so bad where it could be really dangerous. Lordosis, from my understanding, you know, it's inward spinal curvature, basically.
Sure.
That can be corrected relatively easy. And again, that's more just a weight thing than anything. And really back muscles as well. Yeah, so I'm. I mean, that's whatever, you know, as long as, I'm not sure how well I do standing with that lordosis, if I ever was able to stand, but ideally I would be strong enough to support myself and not feel hurt by my spine pushing in.
Sure, gotcha. Well, thanks for sharing that. I hope that it does get better in time in terms of the progression stops more and you can see more improvements, but yeah. So,
sure.
Yeah, man. Well, Kyle, again, I want to thank you for coming on today. We're about to wrap up here, but before we do, this is something I always ask my guests is, A, is there anything else you'd like to share? And then B, do you have any advice for either other people with SMA who may be listening to this, or even people who don't, just any kind of advice you have based on your life?
Yeah. What I would say to people is, get out there and do what you love, you know, because I think too many times, I think people with disabilities, especially when in their adolescence, think that they can't, you know, I can't do this. I can't go to college. I can't. But, you know, you have to be willing to work, you know, work hard and work through the system of accommodations, of caregiving, all that. And I would say, I would challenge anybody who's thinking about going to, you know, who wants to have a career, who wants to go to school and all that, just to take it on and hop on Google and just start looking, you know. And if you need help, ask somebody, you know, message somebody in the community, or maybe even ask your parents if you think that's good. And also, when you see, I think too, is really learning to stick up for yourself, especially with your disability. You know, when you see something wrong, you know, you see somebody parked in a disabled spot that shouldn't be there. You know, I think, you know, you should. I'm not saying you should confront them. Not, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing for everybody. I've done it before, and I'm actually learning to get better at that by just gently just talking to people, saying, "Hey, man, you know, do you have a placard? If not, could you please move?" You know, I think. If you respond with kindness and just ask people nicely, usually I think, you know, they're more willing to be respectful about how they're maybe disrespecting other people with disabilities. So, I mean, that's really my advice, is just to take on life and learn, you know, adapt and, you know, stick up for yourself.
Definitely. That's great advice, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So.
Cool. Well, Kyle, thanks again for coming on today. This was great. And for our listeners out there, as always, I just want to encourage you to check out more stories like this by subscribing to the podcast and checking out all of our content on SMA News Today, joining our forums. You know, we want to hear more stories like this. And so, Kyle, thanks again for coming on today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks again, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, again, listeners, we will be back next month. Please join us in our forums, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you, as always. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.